This is the Injury Pros Podcast, a serious and engaging look at how injuries impact us, the professionals behind it, and the strength it takes to represent the injured. We break down litigation strategy, medical expertise, real-life questions and stories, and the evolving landscape of where our industry is headed next. The Injury Pros starts now. Welcome back to the Injury Pros Podcast. We have a special guest today, one of our new attorneys, Joe Lavin. Welcome, Joe.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Thanks for coming on the podcast. Can you just tell us a little bit about your background, you know, where you grew up? I know you grew up in Bucks County like I did, homegrown, ready to serve our community. But tell us, you know, where you grew up, you know, what inspired you to become a lawyer?
All right. I'm originally from Bensalem. When I was 8 years old, I moved to Newtown, and I still reside in Newtown. So I've been essentially a lifelong Bucks County resident with the exception of college and law school.
So tell us where you went to high school.
I went to Council Rock High School North, and I graduated in 2004.
Okay, so a little bit younger than me, but still, you've been a lawyer now for 14 years?
I've been a lawyer for 14 years, and actually I'm reminded back in when I went to Council Rock, when I was around 15, I used to want to be a jury trial attorney because of all the things that I saw on TV.
What shows were they?
Law and Order, Ally McBeal, and The Practice.
Okay.
It seemed like a good time.
We used to like Boston Legal back in the day.
Okay, yeah. So it was a good lineup in the 90s. But that inspired me to want to pursue being a trial attorney. And then somewhere along the way, I just kept going for that dream and achieved it and then started working toward it. And now here I am 14 years into practice.
Awesome. So where did you go to college?
I went to Penn State.
Penn State. And then law school?
I went to Hofstra on Long Island.
Okay. How was that?
It was a New York minute, I suppose. that was a little bit of a stretch for me. But I think in terms of becoming a whole person, it was important to leave the nest, so to speak, and experience other places before ultimately deciding to come back to Bucks County.
Awesome. So did you feel like you always wanted to be a lawyer? Did anybody inspire you to be a lawyer? Or did you just make that decision somewhere along the way?
I just made the decision myself somewhere along the way and never let go of it. In high school graduation, there was one salutatorian, which was an auditioned person. You had to write your own speech and then give it to all the administration, and they selected one person. And I was selected, and I gave a speech at graduation, and I liked that feeling so much that I started exploring public speaking at an early age.
Wow.
And then sort of all the cards lined up, and it fit well with being a trial attorney.
Gotcha. So what year did you graduate?
From high school?
Law school.
From law school, I graduated in 2011.
Okay. So tell us where you went or where you worked right out of law school.
After law school, I started working for Rand Spear at Spear Greenfield in Richmond, doing plaintiff personal injury work in Philadelphia.
So you got some experience there?
I got a lot of experience there. I learned how to take depositions, how to do arbitrations, how to communicate with clients effectively, and how to present the case to the insurance company in order to recover the most for the clients possible. And I learned from a team of seasoned trial attorneys that really knew the ins and outs of this industry.
That's interesting because I had a very similar experience where I went right from law school to a plaintiff's personal injury firm, got assigned to about 110 cases right off the bat, did litigation right away, you know, worked up demands, and had a few trials within the first 2 years. And then I left that employment and, you know, started a firm with my father. But there's something really good about getting into the mix right away, to litigation, getting into the courtroom, whether you become a district attorney, a public defender, or the path we took was, that's kind of an odder path, getting right into personal injury, but it's so important if you're going to continue in this field to get into the courtroom. So you have those legs under you, courtroom legs, right? But also like learning the ins and outs. Like I always wondered, how do you value a case? You know, how do you decide how to do this or that? If you don't have any of that hands-on experience, I think you're at a real detriment if you get a good case and you want to try it yourself. What do you think about that?
I 1000% agree with you that I think you need to sort of jump in and see if you can swim. This is not an industry for the faint of heart. You need to be dedicated to it. And I have found with other attorneys in my experience, and it mostly is from observation, that the longer an attorney delays getting into the courtroom and getting exposure to litigation, the more it becomes something in their mind that that is a hurdle that they need to get past.
Yeah.
And I think if you kind of rip that Band-Aid off and get right into the courtroom, it's easier to deal with. And I also agree with you that until you start experiencing the ups and downs of litigation, you really don't have experience yet.
Yeah, at the first firm I was with, you know, I had my boss who was kind of like a mentor who oversaw things. So we had advice on how to do things. But then when I went out on my own with my father, I didn't have that anymore. So I was going up against attorneys that were 30 years my senior, you know, with all that experience. And I switched from New Jersey to Pennsylvania law. And you're just, it makes you nervous because you don't know, you don't have that experience. And now it's coming full tilt the other way, where now I'm almost 25 years in as being a lawyer, 25 years of litigation experience, where I feel like, knock on wood, I have a good knowledge of what to do, how to do it, seen most of it, if not all of it, and I feel more confident. And it helps the client, because I think it helps show defense attorneys and insurance companies that if we don't work this out, we're going to trial. And that's the ultimate resolution in our system of justice. If you can't settle it, we have a right to a jury trial under our Constitution.
I generally agree with your perspective. I think early on, you have to ask questions. Nobody knows everything, and you have to admit that to yourself. I was fortunate enough to have a lot of good mentors where I constantly went in with silly, simple questions or complex questions. And it's that desire to know more that I think leads to being a successful attorney. So I don't think that I'm as far developed as you are in terms of my confidence with my skill set. I think I'm inching my way there, though. And as time passes and more people start to rely on me in terms of what to do and where to go, I'm gaining that sense of, I do sort of understand the ins and outs of this industry.
Yeah, and definitely, you know, here on the plaintiff side, which is all we do, you have multiple attorneys here with multiple years of experiences that are going to continue to mentor you, bring you along. You know, like Todd, who's one of our associates here, started a year before. He was by himself too. And he's like, I just wanted to be around you guys because, you know, we think together, we mastermind together, we round table together, whatever you want to call it. We bounce ideas off each other on every case that needs it. And you don't have that if you're a solo practitioner. You have groups of attorneys, you know, AAJ and things like that, or your friends you can call. But it's nice to have an in-house group where you could just talk about anything you want, whether it's business development, marketing, or trial law, or what to do in this situation, or which expert should I get in the case, or how should I respond to this, or what do you think about the value of this case? You know, what's the settlement value? Roundtable that. What mediator should we go to? What arbitrator? Like, there's so many different things that the group together, I believe, here and other places that have groups, are, it makes the case more strong and gets a better result for the client.
I agree with you. I would call that talking shop. And it's probably one of my favorite parts of working with other attorneys in the office. And what that is one of the greatest benefits of working here at Cardisco and Sale and with the Injury Pros is that everyone is very open to communication and talking things out. It's been great so far.
Yes, I guess some attorneys like, you know, to work on their own, but most of us, at least on the plaintiff side, we know there's so many pitfalls and consequences to every decision we make, every action we take. And we know the defense, they have teams of hundreds of defense attorneys where, you know, they're working on their cases together. So it seems to me, as I get more mature in this business, that trial law is more of a team sport than it is just an individual sport.
Yeah, I think there's a time and a place. Sometimes certain tasks and certain things have to come from within. But at the same time, you need a team of people to help you navigate uncertainty in particular.
And I think you mentioned something earlier that constant learning. Like, I know as an entrepreneur and as a trial attorney and managing partner, I'm constantly learning. You know, I don't read as much, but I listen to podcasts every day. I go to conferences. I'm part of coaching groups. I'm part of mastermind groups, whether it's on trial law or just business development. I'm constantly learning. You know, if my mom would ask me back in high school, do I like to learn? The answer is probably not that much, right? But now I've realized that whether you're in trial law, trials and trial procedure and trial strategies always changing. Why? Because we have juries, right? People change, society changes, thoughts changes, values change, and you need to adapt as a trial lawyer depending on which generation you're talking to. You know, the baby boomers, Generation X, Generation Z, they all have different thought processes. We have these attorneys in our office here that we have to learn how to communicate with back and forth, you know, and to get the best result. And as a trial lawyer, you need to know how to talk to each individual or to a group of separate people, what's going to resonate with it, each individual, so that they trust you and they believe in your case and your client. And I think that's the best way to get the best result for our client. But this is a constant learning. Everything's adapting in our business. And if you're not constantly learning and adapting, I don't think you could be a good lawyer today.
I agree with you. And the trial attorney's ability to pivot is essential. If you're in a courtroom and something bad starts to happen, you need to be able to know how to start damage control in that moment.
And do it in a way that you're not showing that you might feel defeated inside, but you can't show that face, because then something that may be minor that you took offensive to yourself, if you show that that was something significant, you know, maybe the jury will think that the other side just won, or that you just lied or didn't tell the truth or exaggerated or some kind of other way. So you're right, you have to adapt, you have to control your emotions enough, and that's difficult in live testimony.
I agree with you, and the jury is always watching. Perspective is reality. The jurors only know what they know coming into the courtroom, and then once the case starts, they're paying attention to everything that happens. I think on your point in terms of learning, I agree with you that the world keeps evolving, and we have to evolve with it. And one thing that I have enjoyed so far in working at Cordisco and Sale and with the Injury Pros is the use of artificial intelligence, because I think that is the way of the future. And we are learning to use that, and it is doing some wonderful things.
Yeah, it really shrinks the time, and actually is sometimes more accurate when you're reviewing thousands of pages of documents, getting arguments and points of evidence and facts marshaled and brought all together within minutes. It's amazing. But, you know, that's what we do here. We're at the cutting edge of technology. We're always trying to improve the client experience. We're always trying to move the cases faster, because faster justice is better for everyone. And it's just, that's one of our mantras here. So, all right, let's step aside for a second. Let's go back to your history here. So you said you worked in a plaintiff's firm down in Center City, Philadelphia, for how long, a couple of years?
It was about 3.5 years.
3.5 years. And then where did you go next?
I went to a large in-house counsel insurance to work for an insurance company.
Okay. And in-house, just for our guests and our listeners here, in-house counsel means what?
Essentially, you are employed directly by the insurance company.
Okay. So is it, what type of insurance company was it?
It was a car insurance company.
Auto insurance?
Automobile insurance.
And
yes.
I'm assuming it's one of the more popular ones in our region.
That's correct.
They have probably some silly commercials, just like most of them.
It's a subjective assessment, but yes.
Come on. They're good commercials because they're positive, but anyway, they get attention, but all right. So you're in-house counsel. Does that mean you're defending personal injury lawsuits?
As in-house counsel, I defended people who were sued sought to minimize the settlement as much as possible and to defend their rights fully.
So in-house counsel means you work for the insurance company, you said, and then when a claim comes in or a case comes in, right? For example, Cordisco and Sale files a case against someone who caused a crash.
Yes.
the insurance company would eventually get notice of it, of the case, right?
Yes.
And then you worked for the insurance company, so you were not outside counsel like for another law firm, but you worked for them. And then what, you would get assigned the case?
Yeah, so I would get assigned a case. It would already be in litigation. Most of the time, the complaint was served on my client already. So I had a client that was being sued, and they wanted to know what to do. They would be set up with an appointment with me, and then we would begin from there. And then I would have discoverable documents in the file, some more so than others. It sort of runs the gambit at that point. Every case is different. But then it becomes an assessment point where you just review what documents you do have.
I always wonder this, but, you know, because we sue a lot of people, our business, right? We have a lot of cases. We have a lot of cases in litigation, you know. When people get served with complaints and they're sued, do they have all different emotions and feelings? What do they generally feel when they first talk to you? Are they angry? Are they upset? Are they concerned, scared? Like, what is it? I've never been on that side.
Yeah.
So what's it like for when you have that first conversation with someone who's been sued?
There's a whole kaleidoscope of emotions that go from a person who does not care, has no interest, believes that's why they got insurance and that's your job. Go do your job.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another realm of people that do the right thing every day, all the time, and they worry about everything, and they want to know all the details. They want to have an hour conversation with you today, tomorrow, the next day, and then 2 weeks from now. And you need to hold their hand throughout the entire process. So it's everything.
Some people are really angry, I suppose.
Some people are really angry because, believe it or not, sometimes there are cases where the person didn't do anything wrong and they get sued. So in those scenarios, people tend to be angry. And in other situations, it sometimes is the conversations and interactions that occurred after the car accident occurred, where people are not nice to each other, that they can remember. And then later on, when we're in litigation, those same feelings never went away, and people just have this anger build up towards each other. Gotcha. And this car accident. So that has happened, and that is another sort of scenario that needs to be managed.
Gotcha. So when you worked for the insurance company, did you handle cases from beginning to trial?
I handled cases from service of the complaint through trial.
Gotcha. How many cases would you handle at any given time?
Depending on the location I was working at the time, I would say approximately 75 to 100.
Okay. And you had a support staff to help you?
Yep.
Legals, things like that?
So I had a legal assistant and an administrative assistant.
Good. All right. And how many years did you work there?
About 8.5.
8.5 years. That's a long time.
Yeah, it was a good, it was a little bit of a haul. Yeah.
When you say a haul, you mean just a long time or?
I think one downfall of working for the insurance industry is that the human aspects of things can disappear. And oftentimes everything is automated and particular and specific. And sometimes not only the human aspect of people working files, but the human aspect of the people who are affected by the files gets lost. So that can drain you long term.
Gotcha. So you've worked for the insurance company, so you've seen the inner working of insurance companies, right?
Yeah.
How they work, how they value cases, all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
So now you're a plaintiff's attorney, right? So how are you able to use what you learned as a defense attorney now that you're a plaintiff's attorney? Completely the other side. Do you feel that's an advantage to you?
I do think it's an advantage. And so having done so much defense work and so much intense defense work, I have a better understanding of the moves that the defendants, the insurance carriers, the insurance adjusters, the moves that they make counter to the things that we do, I can understand why and then better respond to those. But most importantly, I can advise the client on exactly, especially in the beginning of a case where people have so many questions and they don't know what's going on, I can advise them on all of those things and all the potential outcomes if they want to know about it. And most people do. They're curious as to all the different ways things can go.
What to expect, right?
Yeah, but I would say where I found the greatest strength in all the experience that I've had is preparing clients for the courtroom experience, because I understand how a defense attorney is going to question and cross-examine a plaintiff in the courtroom, so I can let them know or give them a sample of how difficult it's going to be, in order to make sure when they are presenting their case that they are putting forward the best package possible.
Gotcha. That makes a lot of sense. My partner, John, and I, we always talk about trial work and litigation almost as a chess game. You need to anticipate what your opponent, or in our case, the defense attorney, is going to do, how they're going to present their case, what arguments they're going to make, where they're going to go against your evidence. Anticipate all that and then set up defenses to each one of those, and almost at the end checkmate them to when they're in a position where they have to go back to the insurance company and say, hey, we got some problems here. You know, maybe we should put some good money on the case, because you don't want to try this case, because if you do, you're exposed to a massive verdict. And, you know, that's the goal. So it's very creative. I'm sure it's creative on the defense side, but we have more time, I believe, to think about things on the plaintiff side. We control how many cases we take and how many cases we take on and which cases we take. And I think we have the ability to spend more time thinking about caring, because we're actually fighting for a person and not just a bottom line at a company.
I agree with that. And I think the plaintiff attorney is the person who controls the narrative in litigation. The defense attorney has no choice but to respond to it. And based on how the narrative is created, the potential responses can be limited.
Gotcha.
Or controlled.
Now, as a plaintiff guy, my whole career, we've seen defense attorneys, and for lack of a better word, drank the Kool-Aid. They're totally defense-minded. They can't come out of it. Yeah. And as employers and partners, you know, we're always looking to hire good attorneys, A players. And some of them may be coming from the defense side. Obviously, you're with us. We don't think you drank the Kool-Aid. But is it hard to transition from the defense side when you've been working with them for so many years to switch back to the plaintiff side and actually care about the individual, fight for the individual, but also see real value in a case? Because we're talking about human damages here. We're talking about things that have no price tag. You know, if I was just listening to a podcast today, if someone was killed by someone else's recklessness, what's the ceiling on that value, right? If you work in the defense business so long, you see numbers come in, right? But who's to say a jury that really cares isn't going to say that somebody's life is worth $1 billion? Where's the limit, you know?
There is no limit, essentially. So
there is no limit in reality, but, you know, is it hard, you know, coming from that defense side, or you
were right,
early plaintiff's minded, went to the defense, learned a whole lot, and now you feel like you're back at home? Tell us how you feel about that.
All right, so I do think every case, and it sort of fits with the medical realm, is like everyone is a snowflake. We're all totally different. And each case is totally different. From the defense perspective, sometimes cases have no value, or your client's not responsible for the accident, and then they need to be those cases need to be defended. But on the flip side, there are cases where your client makes a mistake and someone is seriously injured, and then there is a value to that. How you get that value and how you resolve that case is up to the insurance company and the attorney handling it and all of the different sort of tripartite parts that go into it.
All right, I want you to take all your experience on the defense side and cross-examining plaintiffs, minimizing plaintiffs' claims. That's what the defense essentially does, right? That's their job.
I would agree with that.
Okay. So now you're on a plaintiff side, and now you have plaintiff clients or people that have been injured, individuals. What advice can you give to people who have been injured, who are making a claim, may make a claim, are in litigation? How should they act as a plaintiff? What should they do? What tips can you give people so that they have their best chance at getting the best value out of their case from the insurance company?
All right. So my first recommendation is to take it seriously. If you're not taking it seriously, then no one else is going to take you seriously. And that includes not only your communication with your attorney, but communications with medical doctors and your family members. Don't downplay your suffering. Be honest about it everywhere you go. I know sometimes it's hard and you don't, and people don't want to feel like they're complaining all the time. But if people don't know, they can't get you help. Especially when you're talking to medical providers, sometimes in medical offices, they're busy too, and they're running around and they document what they can remember. So if you don't clearly communicate to your medical provider what your complaints are, they won't get written down. And then months, weeks, months, years later, when an attorney goes to look at those records, it's not going to contain what you remember experiencing. And it's important that all of those things get written down and that it essentially is done with a sense of urgency. If you get into a car accident and you're in serious pain and you need to go to the emergency room, you should go to the emergency room or urgent care or your primary care doctor. You gotta document the subjective pain that you're feeling as soon as possible, because the insurance company is likely to look at you not doing that as a sort of a hole in your case, and they'll exploit it. And there's nothing more frustrating when you're in pain and trying to deal with it and trying to avoid attorneys and doctors and things of that nature. And then having that period of reflection on what to do be used against you. There's nothing worse than that. So document, go get the medical treatment that you need, document everything, and be honest with everyone.
All right, let me ask you this. Gaps in treatment. We all heard about gaps in treatment. That's when a client is, or patient is not following the doctor's advice. For example, doctor wants them to go to physical therapy 3 days a week. They're only going 1 day a week. Doctor recommends they go meet with a pain management specialist. The injured person waits 2 months to make the appointment, don't get the appointment for another 6 weeks. There's a huge gap in treatment. Things like that. Now, you being a defense attorney for so many years, what advice can you give our clients, our new clients, our injured clients, why you should not have any significant gaps in treatment, and why and how will the defense exploit that in a case?
All right. On a personal level, if you don't follow the doctor's recommendation for getting better, then you're not going to get better. In a professional front, if there's gaps in your treatment, then a defense attorney's job is to exploit that as if you don't care about it, or there must be no injury if you didn't do that. The reality is most people have full-time jobs, family, friends, and obligations outside of treating with medical doctors that they need to attend to. And so that can explain why someone wouldn't do it. But it's important, if the doctor has recommended you to take a certain course of treatment in order to get better, that you are consistently doing that. And again, it goes down to documenting everything, because at the end of the day, how you felt, what you thought, what you did, isn't, if it's not documented, it's essentially like it didn't happen. So you need to go frequently, you need to follow the recommendations and make sure that the documentation is accurate, because when you submit that to the insurance company, that puts you in the best position to maximize the value on your case.
And I've seen this with our plaintiffs, you know. Pain elicits psychological injury. It elicits anxiety. It elicits sometimes depression. It weighs on people. And sometimes people that are deep in anxiety, post-traumatic stress syndrome, depression, those types of diagnoses don't have their life in order, meaning they don't do everything they're supposed to do. They delay things. They don't make that appointment, things like that. The defense attorneys care. You know, if you have anxiety or depression and you skipped 3 months of treatment?
I would say no. And from my personal experience, I think the key to being a strong defense attorney is taking the human aspect out of it and just narrowing things down to facts and evidence and simplicity. So if you could ignore everything a plaintiff says regarding pain and suffering, how things affect them on a daily basis, and narrow it down to minimal chiropractic treatment that you went to inconsistently, That is the best way to attack a case, is to take the human aspect out of it.
Gotcha. Couple more questions. I always tell my clients, or, you know, our injured clients, to be completely honest all the time. Anything you say or do could be used against you in a civil case, almost like a criminal case. Any type of exaggeration, overdoing it, anything like that, any words you use that overdo a case or overdo your feelings, how important is that to be honest and straightforward, you know, when we're presenting our cases as plaintiff's trial lawyers? And conversely, how, when a defense attorney smells any of that kind of exaggeration or dishonesty, what, how important is that to be honest, and what could happen if our clients are not completely honest in a case?
All right, so I think being honest is important in every aspect of life. If you are honest and straightforward, and you're doing the right things, there's not a lot to worry about. In the personal injury litigation context, honesty is everything. And I think it's less of a concern of people over-exaggerating their injuries, and more of a concern of somebody who is seriously injured downplaying how bad it is, and that getting documented somewhere, whether it be on social media or in passing, if you're dealing with attorneys and somebody's within an ear stretch, them hearing you downplay it and like, oh, no, I'm okay. As much as that is a way to get out of the conversation without having to talk about your pain and suffering, if that gets documented somewhere, then there's documentation that says you're okay.
We see that a lot in depositions, where a patient or a client of ours tells a physical therapist, how are you doing today? I'm doing great today, because they're a generally positive person. And every other day is, I'm doing bad, I'm doing crappy, I feel a lot of pain, this and that. And the defense attorney likes to point that one day out in the deposition to show that, maybe she's not that bad.
And I would say, when you're treating with chiropractor, physical therapy, the types of things where you're going on a regular basis in order to maintain the progress that you're making, you're interacting with a medical provider who is also a person. They're going to ask you how your weekend was. They're going to ask you how the kids are. They're going to ask you to follow up with things if they're a decent human being. But it's important to keep in mind in those situations that that person's also documenting your medical records, which are going to get used later. So you just want to be honest and straightforward without being disingenuous.
Gotcha. So you mentioned social media, and I want to make that point and see what you think about that. Most of our clients are on social media at this point in the world, right? You know, I always tell my clients, try not to post anything on social media after your accident. Obviously, that doesn't work with every client. Some people are very social media interested, and they post every day, and that's just who they are. Unfortunately, we know insurance companies and insurance companies and insurance investigators are scouring social media for photos, for statements, for anything they could find to use against the plaintiff to kind of show that this plaintiff may be exaggerating a little bit or may not be as bad as they say they are. How rampant is that from what you've seen as working on the defense side?
I would say the knee-jerk reaction is to just run a social media search to see what kind of person we're dealing with. In the social media realm, I think it's important to also note that just because someone is experiencing orthopedic pain, either in their neck, their back, a knee, or a shoulder, doesn't mean that they can't stand up and smile for a picture. It doesn't mean that they can't go on the shore vacation and sit on the beach. But when they're doing those things, they generally are still in pain. What I think is the problem with the use of social media in litigation today is that people want to take this encapsulated time and pretend like this smiling picture where somebody went out to the bar with their friends means that the other 23 plus hours of the day, they weren't experiencing pain when they did that. So just because you're in pain doesn't mean that your life ends. So I think there are issues in the future with regard to social media, but I would say the most persuasive evidence is if there's video evidence of somebody cartwheeling down the road and they have a shoulder injury, that's not a credible claim. And I think we would be honest with you about that. If you're able to do those kinds of things, it doesn't make sense, right? So the main concern is, if you're injured, are you telling people that you can't do something that you can, or vice versa? But at the end of the day, I do think the picture does not tell the whole story.
That's a great point. And defense are probably using that to insinuate that they're always like that, always happy, and it's not the same story. It just goes back to honesty. If you're a plaintiff, and if you're a good person, be honest. Why? Because if you tell lies, you forget lies, right?
Yeah.
If you tell the truth, it's your truth, right? You can't remember all your lies. Yeah. Not saying that we don't want any plaintiffs ever telling, you know, telling lies or not being truthful, because, you know, we spend hundreds of hours on cases. We spend tens of thousands of dollars on some cases, if not hundreds of thousands. And the last thing we want to do is have to drop a case because our client is a liar. Thankfully, that hasn't happened here, and I can't remember it happening in a long, long, long time.
Yeah.
But just goes back to honesty. Now, just to close up, one thing I always tell my plaintiffs preparing for the depositions is that the defense attorney and the insurance company can't prove that the accident didn't happen. Most of the time can't prove that it's not the other person's fault. And they can't disprove your pain necessarily. They could try to, but you have to be consistent throughout the case, whether it's in the beginning at the police, when the police interview you at the accident scene, whether it's at the hospital, whether it's with your treaters, whether it's in your complaint, in your answers to interrogatories, and at your deposition. If you're consistent and your story is the same throughout, it's believable. So my theory is what defense attorneys try to do is paint little black clouds over little inconsistencies throughout the case, and they can't disprove anything significantly, and they sometimes don't try it because then they would lose credibility, but they paint little black clouds over the treatment, over what she said here, over what happened here, and they tell a different version of the story than the plaintiff's telling at trial. Is it more like what Sally says, or is it more like this, meaning that it's not as clear as Sally says? She has some inconsistencies here, which you really have to look at. And it doesn't usually result in a zero verdict, but my theory is it results in a compromise verdict, meaning that, you know, if there's 12 people on a jury panel, there's going to be some conservative people on there that don't like awarding money in personal injury cases or to plaintiffs or just to other people. So those conservative people are going to latch onto those black clouds and really bring the value of the case or the jury verdict down. So our goal, obviously, as plaintiff's attorneys, is to increase the value of a jury verdict or a settlement. Defense attorneys are to decrease that on behalf of their client, the defendant, and the insurance company. So what is your theory on that, and have you ever thought about it that way?
That is true, that the plaintiff attorney's job is to try to build up the value. And I think there's a lot of defense attorneys that recognize at the outset when they get the case that they don't have a liability or causation defense. And on damages, it's going to be what it's going to be. And when a plaintiff testifies to their subjective complaints, you don't really have anything that you can go back at with them unless you have surveillance or social media evidence. So that is the job. What I think is important for the people out there to know is that if you have an attorney that has perspective on that, they can advise you as you're going through the process, which is why it would be important if anybody has a claim that they need to come talk to us about it.
Consistency is important, but educating your clients, at least from the plaintiff side, that's all I can speak about, educating them from the beginning, telling them what to look for, what not to look for, where the defense will likely go on defenses and theories, and try to minimize them from day one, even before we file a suit, I think is one of the most important things we can do as trial lawyers.
And what I say to my clients now is I say, listen, if I was the defense attorney on your case, this is what I'd do. boom, 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 boom. And I make them aware of what is likely to happen if somebody really wanted to downplay your claim, how they would approach it. And that is a good piece of evidence to put in their mind so that when they're going through the process, they do what's best for them.
So it sounds like your past experience as a defense attorney working with insurance companies is really going to help you here at Cordisco and Sale.
Yeah. It's
going to help our clients gain maximum advantage throughout the entire case. And when push comes to shove, we are a litigation firm. We will litigate the case if we don't get a fair offer or policy limits. And if we don't get a fair offer in litigation, we'll go to trial. Our numbers show that we get up to 40% more in value on cases once we litigate them. So moving forward, we are a litigation firm, and the insurance companies will know that. Hopefully they'll realize that, and they will make us more fair offers, you know, compared to firms that don't litigate. And that's the game. That's the way of practicing personal injury law in the current era is if you don't get a fair offer, you're going to fight. You're going to continue to fight. You're not going to be afraid to go to court. And you are going to talk to a jury of independent people, and the jury is going to have to finally tell us what the case is worth. And at that point, the insurance company is risking a lot of money, and our client's risking some money. But if we don't get fair values for our clients, we're not doing our job.
At the end of the day, I think that is one of the greatest parts of working here at Cordisco and Sale so far, is that all of the trial attorneys, all of the support staff, everyone comes from a different background, but comes from a strong background. And the different perspectives gives a more holistic or comprehensive approach to litigation. So far, I have been enjoying the process, and I'm glad to be a part of the Injury Pros team.
And Joe, thanks for choosing us and being with us. As you know, I only like to hire A players, and you've shown that you are, and you'll continue to educate us from a defense perspective, but also educate our clients so that we continue to grow as a firm and we continue to get great results for our clients. But anyway, thanks for coming in on your first Injury Pros podcast. Hopefully you're going to be a host someday and having your own guests on, and we will continue our conversation we have so much to talk about, and this is just the tip of the iceberg.
Sounds good to me. Let's get at it.
All right.